Welcome to a very special series we're doing on the history of North Canton, from its earliest days to the modern days. This is basically a crash course for those of you who are new to the area, or those of you who are young and technically new to the area. Understand, of course, this is just a bird's eye view of history. Can't talk about everything and everybody, but this will give you the meat and potatoes of what this community is about and where it came from. Welcome to A Place in Time, the official podcast of the North Canton Heritage Society. Ohio became a state in 1803 following the Louisiana Purchase. At the time, there were only a few settlements within its boundaries, and most of Ohio was still wilderness. Stark County, in northeastern Ohio, was created in 1808 and organized in 1809. It was named after John Stark, a soldier in the Revolutionary War. 3 years before this, developer Bezaleel Wells purchased a swath of land and established Canton. He then purchased a large tract of land, broke it down into lots, and sold them to families and businesses. There was a road plan going from Canton to New Lisbon on the other side of the Tuscarawas River, which was going to lead to a lot of business opportunities and travel. Plain Township, being the land between the branches of the Nimishillen Creek, was established in 1809. It was named because of its flat, fairly treeless land. It also lacked mosquitoes, which was an attractive prospect then and now. In 1806, land in Plain Township was purchased by Peter Willimon. He slowly sold some of his land to others, leading to a rise in farms and mills in the area. One such mill, a grist mill, was owned by John Everhard, whose grist mill was on the west branch of the Nimishillen Creek. Everhard, along with a couple named George and Catherine Nodell, helped build a road that linked Canton to the northern villages of Uniontown and Greentown. Now, before, there had only been a footpath that ran north and south, but thanks to them, it actually developed into an actual road, an actual street. That road is Route 91. That road is Cleveland Avenue. That road is Main Street, north and south. And they are the ones that helped create it. Intersecting what would become Main Street was Portage, which linked Main Street, called Market back then, to what is now Canal Fulton in the Ohio and Erie Canal. In 1831, a group of investors decided to turn the land at that intersection, which was near the Willimon House, into a town. Samuel Bechtel was hired to survey the area. Take a moment to think about that. Even though there were some settlers in our community, this was the man that took an accounting of the lands that we reside in. I have this clear image of a man stumbling through thickets and forests, over creeks and down our rolling hills, measuring, making notations, examining apple trees and strawberry bushes. Look out your nearest window if you're in North Canton. Just blot out any of the modern objects. The houses, the cars, the streets, the driveways, the trampolines. And just picture, for a moment, woods filled with raccoons and squirrels and chipmunks and deer and geese and ducks. Just aplenty. This was there. This is what Samuel Bechtel saw. He saw the land that we're living on in its purest form, untouched by the hands of man. Well, maybe I'm getting a little too romantic about it, as I tend to do, but I think it's just so fascinating to think about that. What did this place look like in 1831 when Mr. Bechtel was doing a survey? As an aside, I think this is a good place to mention the cucumber magnolia tree, which is the largest and oldest in the world, and is located within North Canton city limits. It's 96 feet tall, 299 inches round, and is 435 years old. It's currently located in the private gated community of Auburn Knolls, but think about this. Samuel Bechtel may have seen it, may have touched it, and it was still 245 years old. The land we live on is older than all of us, but there are still touchstones that connect us with the past. And I just find that fascinating. As of 1831, the village of New Berlin was established. Now, I'm sure there are some of you out there that are wondering, hold up, I thought it was North Canton, not New Berlin. Why are you talking about New Berlin? Ah, and that is a great question, and the answer is pretty simple. This place was called New Berlin because there are a lot of German settlers. Now, we're going to get into why and how New Berlin became North Canton in a later episode, but all you need to know now is that North Canton, up until the very earliest days of the 20th century, was New Berlin. Once established, the community of New Berlin began to grow. Residents began trading goods with neighboring villages. Businesses like general stores and sawmills were established. The New Berlin Post Office was created in December 1832, and mail was delivered every 3 days by wagon. In 1835, the first schoolhouse, a log cabin, was built. And of course, there were churches. Up at the current location of the North Canton Cemetery, the German Lutheran Church had been established. In 1838, a new church was started by Jonas Willemann, and they met every 2 to 4 weeks in his farmhouse. In 1845, a meeting house was built for New Berlin by local residents, in church services where different Christian denominations met there. Disciples of Christ, Church of God, Reformed Lutherans, the Dunkards, and the Methodists. It was called the Union Church. And a year later, in 1846, the Catholic Church of St. Paul's was erected for 34 Catholics in the area. Heading into the 1850s, New Berlin seemed to be doing pretty well. The village was growing, but in the heart of our country, a great debate was unfolding, talking about slavery. And I'm talking about the Civil War. As the country was changing around New Bern, the impact was being felt within the community in the form of great political debates and discussions. Some believed that slavery should be completely eliminated, abolished. Others believed it was up to the states' rights to whether or not to keep or abolish slaves. And there were some draft dodgers. Some of the landlords even refused to open their establishments for soldiers. But at the Bitzer Hotel, located in the very center of New Berlin, which is actually where the lawn to the old Hoover Company is now, Michael Bitzer and his wife Elizabeth not only made sure that all soldiers that came through had a meal, but they also took no payment for their work. Some 84 men from New Berlin became soldiers in Company E, 162nd Regiment, Ohio Volunteer Infantry. They were all committed to 100 days of service and were organized at Camp Chase, which is west of Columbus. They were trained and ordered into Kentucky, down to Covington, where they took part in protecting Cincinnati from John Hunt Morgan during the Morgan's raids. I'm going to read off a list of men who unfortunately lost their lives in New Berlin and Plain Township during the Civil War. Henry Jefferson Bear, Dennis Donzie, Augustus Johns, Harry Kyle, Hiram Kyle, David Lesh, Hiram Litchie, Samuel Litchie, Daniel Martin, Isaac Oberlin, Daniel Palmer, Daniel B. Ralston, John Rausch, Manuel Sager, Michael Saylor, Nicholas Saylor, Henry Schultz, Henry L. Schlott, Ephraim Schrantz, Abraham Schreiner, John Schuler, Solomon W. Smith, Edwin Tersch, Henry Ward, John B. Williman, David Young. Now there are some other groups that served the Union from New Berlin and Plain Township. And they included the 19th Ohio Volunteer Infantry. There was also the 3rd Independent Battery, the 43rd Ohio Volunteer Infantry, 76th Ohio Infantry, and the 104th Volunteer Infantry. The 104th actually took part in a lot of major battles during the Civil War, including the Siege of Knoxville and the Siege of Atlanta. The Civil War ended in 1865. Ohio had played a special part in the war, not just because of the amount of troops it provided, but also because of the stations in the Underground Railroad that lined the Ohio River. One part of the Underground Railroad even came up through Stark County in Maslin, west of Canton. New Berlin, having lost some of its sons to the war, found itself continuing to grow. Unlike Canton and Maslin, which directly benefited from the new railroad system in the area, New Berlin's growth came more from within. By the late 1860s, the population had grown to approximately 300 persons, with another 2,000 scattered outside the village in Plain Township. Several businesses had grown and been established. There was the meat market owned by Frank Shield, a cabinet shop by Israel Carpenter, a livery stable owned by H. Bailey. Joel Stevens had a pottery business that he later sold to Isaac Stripe, who instead manufactured tiles and sewer pipe. There was a copperage shop owned by Lewis Culp, a tailor shop by Isaac Firestone, a wagon shop owned by Mr. Miller, a gunsmith shop owned by Daniel Ream, and a weaver, Benjamin Litchie, who had become well-known maker of carpets and coverlets. And there's also the two hotels. There was one on the northeast corner of the town square, and then there is another one a few buildings away on the southeast side of the square. Sometimes a village can change the world. If you don't believe me, let me tell you about the Bitzers. Mrs. Bitzer had the honor of meeting President Lincoln following the delivery of the Gettysburg Address. And because the war was so fresh in people's minds, it spurred on a lot of political discussions at the Bitzer Hotel. Michael and his wife decided to host a Republican rally at the Bitzer Hotel and asked one William McKinley to come deliver his first political speech there. Michael Bitzer later took credit for getting Mr. McKinley into politics. Years later, as governor, Mr. McKinley would drive through New Berlin with his wife and point out the corner where he gave that first speech. Of course, William McKinley later went on to become the 25th President of the United States until his death in 1901. So, yeah, sometimes a village can change the world. Next episode, we're going to start to lay down some seeds for another world-changing event, or rather, invention. Next episode. As New Berlin enters the 20th century, we're going to focus on three individuals that help shape the character and future of New Berlin. Next month, Second Generation. Research for this podcast came primarily from North Canton, Ohio, A Place in Time, by Rebecca Ink Hall and Paul David Kiefer, published by the North Canton Heritage Society. A new edition is currently available in our gift shop. Additional research was provided by Doug Wechter and also came from the North Canton Heritage Volume 1, 1805 through 1940 by Ruth Basner. This has been a production of the North Canton Heritage Society. The views, opinions, and comments made by the hosts, co-hosts, or guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect those of the North Canton Heritage Society. The North Canton Heritage Society is a non-profit historical organization located in North Canton, Ohio, and is dedicated to preserving the history and heritage of North Canton through education, research, and general good times. We are a member-driven organization, and as such, we depend on your membership to keep going. You can go to our website, www.northcantonheritage.org, to learn more about becoming a member. You can also follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Music was provided by the royalty-free websites Free Music Archive and Free Sound. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you around town.